This is 90.7 FM WGXC Accra, Hudson, Catskill, the station that everyone loves.
You're listening to Radio Wonderland, WGXC, radio made from radio.
Joshua Freed's Radio Wonderland comes to High Low in Catskill, Saturday, April 28th at 8 p.m. Turn out to High Low in Catskill or tune in a special extra web stream online at WGXC.org. Click on the Listen Now button and scroll down to the bottom to find the Radio Wonderland stream at 8 p.m. Saturday, April 28th from High Low in Catskill, or find it on the Wavefarm Radio app, available for free in the App Store.
Creating opportunities, fighting poverty, changing lives. For almost 50 years, Community Action of Greene County has proudly served our community, providing education, tools, and advocacy for those in need. Services range from emergency services, food pantry, housing and homelessness assistance, and weatherization in Greene County, to domestic violence and Wheels for Work programs in both Greene and Columbia counties. Our Pay It Forward community thrift store generates income to support our programs. For more information, to donate, to volunteer, or if you are in need of services, please visit us at www.cagcny.org or dial 943-9205.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
My name is George Spencer. Welcome to Art Etc. this Thursday afternoon, which is, I guess, the third decent day of what apparently is spring. I'm very happy to have Fern Apfel with me. She is an artist who's doing some extremely interesting and unusual and, to my eye, I think very beautiful artwork, and we're going to be talking about that today. She has a show coming up, right?
Yes, that's right.
At Concepto Gallery?
Yes, on Upper Warren Street, right here in Hudson.
741 Warren Street.
Yes, just north of Gray's Inn.
So you want to tell us a little bit about that show? And
sure. So it's a three-person show. I'm one of two other, one of three artists that will be showing. The gallery is run by Kiyoshi Ike, and he's really creating, has been creating a really edgy space and lots of interesting things going on there. And hopefully, you know, I'm sure more to come. I'm showing the work is, the title of the show is Narrative, and which is about telling stories.
Oh, I didn't realize. That's the first I heard about what the title was.
Yeah, so he has named this, and that is a title that encompasses all three artists, and he felt that that was appropriate. My work definitely tells a story, and so that's a theme of the upcoming show. It opens on May 19th, and there is an opening at from 6 to 8. It's a Saturday night, so, and everybody is welcome.
And that's 741 Warren Street.
Warren Street, Concepto, Hudson.
Great. Well, I'll be there. And I've seen a lot of your work, actually, over the last couple of years since I moved here, because you had a big show at the Orton Davis Gallery, right?
Yes. I was in 2016, and it was all work based on books. There was a lot of text and stories in that, and there was a lot of pictures of books.
Okay, and then a couple of days ago, I was over at the Spencertown Academy.
Oh, okay.
And you had, what, three pieces there?
Two pieces there.
So you get around.
I try to.
You try to. Well, it sounds to me like okay, now, and I want to add, as far as getting around, you know, we got together, I don't know, maybe 2 months ago, mm-hmm. and talked and, you know, and decided this would be fun to do. And then what happened was yesterday, I guess it was, we got together and talked mm-hmm. some more. But
right.
One of the things that I remember a lot of what we talked about, mm-hmm. one of the things that really stuck in my mind is that you were in a show with two people who are extremely eminent. And I don't think there are very many people in this world who can say that they were in a show with John Ashbery and Ellsworth Kelly.
Yeah, that was a huge honor. And it was at Spencertown Academy.
Oh, it was there.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
It was at, so Ellsworth Kelly, who has, of course, a couple of years, he passed away a couple of years ago, but and so did actually very recently John Ashbery. But Ellsworth Kelly's foundation gave the Academy money to redo that gallery space a number of years before that.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, Gwen Mayers was curating a show on collage, of which I do, and she asked me to be in it. And she said to me, well, I'm thinking to ask Ellsworth Kelly, what do you think? Do you think he'll even answer the phone? And I said,
what,
you know,
the idea was what? You might say, no, I don't want to be in a show with Ellsworth Kelly?
So she wanted to ask him, but she was a little anxious about it.
She was clearing it with you.
She mentioned it, and she didn't really clear it. She was just talking. And I said, we both said, why not? Try. And he was, you know, loved to do. He said, of course. And he came to the opening. And he is a grand, you know, grand man. And he's done fabulous things for the community.
But I don't remember ever seeing collages of his.
They were small postcards. And he did collages.
Oh, he did those in France. Is that what it was?
And he was at the opening. And I talked to him. And I said to him, he said, those are 40 years old. And I said to him, well, boy, they really hold up. They're great. He was charming.
Were these the shadow ones?
There was one, I don't remember thinking of it that way, but there was one of postcards. I think one was, might have been a postcard of Chatham, actually. I'm not really sure. I had a picture on it. And there was some splashes of color on top of it. And they were, you know, fun and lovely. And John Ashbery had some of his collages. And it's an honor to have said that. And it was wonderful that Ellsworth came to the opening and was just lovely. He was a generous and lovely man.
Did you get a chance to talk to John Ashbery?
He wasn't there.
He wasn't there.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. But I did talk to Ellsworth for about 20 minutes, and we talked about books, actually.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah,
that's
it was fun.
There was a thing at the new school. It's a long story, which I won't go mm-hmm. into. But when one of his books came out, something it has the title. It has AIR and mm-hmm. air, and mm-hmm. so it's, you know, as is always the case with him, it's
right.
not clear whether it's what we breathe or what we sing or what was it called? Anyway, he was very nice. I got a chance to talk to him, and he was very surprised that I knew where he grew up. Outside mm-hmm. of Rochester in Sodus, New York, and I had grown mm-hmm. up in Rochester, so I knew where Sodus was. I don't think there's anybody else in the world who knows where Sodus was, so we talked about Sodus for quite a while. But anyway, why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, where you grew up, who was around, who was doing mm-hmm. what in your family, and
Well, I was born on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, and then...
Now, when you say the Lower East Side of Manhattan...
Stuyvesant Town.
Oh, okay.
Like, what was it, 14th
Street? 14th
Street. Yeah. That's where I lived. And then we moved to kind of post-war, you know, house on the south shore of, right outside the city of Long Island. And it was a pretty typical, you know, middle-class upbringing. My father was, although he wrote poetry, he wrote stories, he could render any object, and he could sing an aria, although he had a very 9-to-5 job. And I was slightly a wayward kid or a little bit lost, and he sort of said, well, hey, there is something you can do, and he directed me towards the arts, mm-hmm. and which I'm a huge believer in for all children and all types of arts, because they, you know, in their way, for the right people, they save us. So it was just something then that was part of who I am for the rest of my life.
Now, when you say wayward,
unfocused. Uh-huh. Wandering away, getting into not big trouble, many little tiny quiet troubles. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Quiet trouble. Okay, well, maybe we'll just leave it at that. But you're not the first person who's been on this show that had a wayward
sometimes
early life, yeah. and quiet troubles, yeah, and some, yeah. a lot, well, sometimes noisier.
It's not that you're doing horrible, bad things in the world. It's just inside you need to find something.
Okay.
You know, it's whatever. Anyway.
So having paint around, or having drawings, or having mm-hmm. somebody working on drawings, mm-hmm. and did your father publish any of the poetry or things he was writing?
Just in high school, you know, uh-huh. high school literary magazine kind of stuff, very little. He was always trying to win writing contests for jingles, for uh-huh. contests to try to earn some money, which, so we spent a lot of time in our home trying to write jingles for commercial contests.
Oh, really?
To win money. But we never did.
It never worked out?
Never worked out.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
and I remember you told me your mother was a milliner.
No, his mother
oh,
was
his
a
mother
was a milliner.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
His mother was a milliner.
Yeah, yeah. They grew up in East Harlem, and, you know, typical Turner.
East Harlem. So was that Spanish Harlem?
Yes, uh-huh. I think so. And, you know, just typical poor immigrant story. She had a sign in the window. She made hats. And
did you ever see any of the hats she made?
No, she died many years before I was born. Uh-huh. Yeah, uh-huh. No.
I love women's hats. I think that's one of the things that definitely... I love women's shoes, but I think they pay less attention to shoes and more attention to hats.
They'd be better off.
I mean, well, I don't know about them, but I mean, I'd like to see hats.
That's funny.
You know, we were talking yesterday about Melania's great, big, enormous white hat.
Yes, yes.
Which,
what,
we decided it was sort of a defensive hat.
Right.
Is that not the case?
Very likely it's the case.
Very likely that's the case.
I don't know personally, but...
All right. So you went to museums and...
We always went to museums, and then he would take us to places like the Frick, you know, things that were not the most obvious places. He would take us these special, beautiful, more intimate places, and you know, it left a mark on me, and it was just something that in school then I just you know, always then gravitated to the arts. It's what I could do, mm-hmm. it's what I enjoyed doing, for all the reasons, you know, you enjoy doing whatever you're doing. And
did you like the Frick?
I loved it. I have fun memories.
Do you remember remember the first time you went?
I remember seeing the Renoir with the two little girls when you walked in the door.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in their fur coats. So yeah. I always remember that.
But it's quite a dining room in that place, isn't
it? Yes. Yeah. So I'll have to go back soon. I haven't been back for a while. So.
I haven't been there in probably 5 years, something like that. But it is an amazing place.
Okay.
So... Then you were in school,
mm-hmm.
and then you went to college,
mm-hmm.
and you studied art there?
Correct. Painting at New Paltz.
At New Paltz.
Right. Got a degree in art education, which is all you could get then. But I studied with Manny Bromberg,
mm-hmm.
who is still alive, and he lives in Woodstock, and he was quite a famous at the time, and still well regarded, and Ben Bishop, and a couple of people there who were pretty fabulous, and mm-hmm. Taught me a lot. And they were, you know, I still remember things that they talked about, and it was.
That's interesting. Yeah. And so you got out of, but did you get an MFA?
I don't have an MFA. I when I left college, I joined. I was in what is called the Domestic Peace mm-hmm. Corps, which is VISTA, and I did that for a while, and then I went back to New York City and I studied at the Art Students League. It's a fabulous place. Very easy. We in those days we didn't so much think about MFAs. You went to the Art Students League because it was peopled with wonderful instructors, and you just would walk in the door. And at the time, I think it was full-time class was like $45.
That's amazing.
And
that was 5 days a week, right?
5 days a week, and you would just walk in the door and pay and go to class. There was no applications. There was no, it was just easy. And it was a fabulous place to study in a very pure way. And they were wonderful to me. I wound up getting many scholarships, so I didn't even have to pay the $45. I got scholarships that included art supplies. And I studied there for, you know, quite a while. I studied with a couple of fabulous instructors in their senior years. And so they're no longer around. And I
so these are what, Joseph Hirsch?
Joseph Hirsch, Robert Beverly Hale, who's a famous anatomist.
Yeah, why don't you talk? I guess what he does isn't done anymore, but
yeah, so
I remember seeing him.
So he was
twice do
he,
his.
Yeah, so he was one. He was the first curator in contemporary American art at the Met.
The Met, yeah.
And he was instrumental in getting the Met it was very controversial at the time to buy a Jackson Pollock. And a very famous one, and they have it because of him. And apparently, it was a to do. And he was also an artist and an instructor. And he taught in I think numerous places. But at the League, he taught anatomy, and he was a character. And he was first of all he would stand in this black jacket, kind of a suit jacket, and he would have pants that were probably 3 inches above his socks.
Oh, really?
And he would have a cigarette in a cigarette holder that inside while he's teaching. So this is, you would never see this these days. And he kept talking, and he was very animated. He knew his anatomy backwards and forwards. And the ash would get longer and longer and longer. And then it would just fall right on his suit, and he would just not bat an eye and keep going. And he was just charming, and made anatomy, which can be a very, very dry subject, fun. And at the time, you know, I studied with him, as many people did, and it was a pleasure to be in his class. And, you know, you worked so hard before and after the class to study. I don't know it anymore, but I knew every name of every muscle and limb and bone and everything. And it was somehow very, when you went into draw it, life drawing there after studying with him and studying on your own, you know, it was a beautiful experience, and it was almost like what yoga does for people today. You would mm-hmm. just get so involved in all of this, the time would fly by, and it was a great experience. I had a great experience at the League.
Let me ask you sort of an unrelated question. You mentioned yoga, and we're going to get around to your work, but I mean, mm-hmm. to me, it's calming.
Right.
And
I'm happy to hear that.
you know, and it makes one contemplate. It makes one slow down and see what's going on rather than running to catch the bus kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, is some of this, do you do yoga?
I do not.
You don't?
Because
you meditate?
I do not.
You do not.
I paint.
Oh, okay. So that's, all right.
So I'm always kind of trying to paint silence. Mm-hmm. So when I sometimes when I'm starting a picture or a group of pictures, I try to think of what I want this picture to not so much say, but look like and feel and how I want it to feel. And so I am always looking to paint something quiet and to paint something that will be something in repose or the opposite of noise. Mm-hmm. And I am trying to kind of reach that. Mm-hmm. Or to take, if it's a still life, to take an object and to just see the sort of the pureness and the beauty in one simple thing. Mm-hmm. You know, so
do you know why you're drawn to that?
I don't. I do like quiet. I do not like noise. But I don't know. But I am very drawn to it. I did a show with. I was always drawn before I lived up here. I was always drawn to, let's say, the Shaker museums. Mm-hmm. And the Shaker world, and their objects, the furniture, the silence that it creates. I've been always drawn to Amish, the intense color, but yet extraordinarily calmness in Amish quilts. Mm-hmm. So it's just something. I mean, we all have things that all of us have things that just speak to us in some personal way, and they're all different things. And there's not a good thing and a bad thing. They're just, you know, there's something in all of us that is just even drawn to different friends or people or lands, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just, and mm-hmm. that's just what I'm drawn to.
That's very interesting. You started out at the art, well, you were painting obviously well before mm-hmm. this, but there's been a progression. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if maybe what we should do is just to talk a little bit about what you're doing now.
Okay.
You know, and then what I'd be interested mm-hmm. in doing, and by the way, if anything I ask you, you don't want to talk about,
it's okay.
You just tell me,
right.
Or if there's something you want to talk mm-hmm. about that mm-hmm. I haven't suggested, we'll do it, okay? But I'm sort of interested in how you got to what you're doing now. And then you surprised me mm-hmm. yesterday because you told me now you were working with all these bright colors, and I can just see, you know, this is obviously Times Square in Kinderhook,
right.
The lights flashing
yeah,
on and off.
Yeah, no.
But so I'm always interested in mm-hmm. you know, these progressions that people make. And and it sort of relates to what we were talking about when we were driving down here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people who just do the same thing.
Right, right. So for me, one thing just leads to another, okay? And and so before this, a year or so ago, I spent an entire year working on modern remakes of illuminated manuscripts, which is something I've always loved. And then I morphed.
Stop right there because...
Okay.
I know what you're talking about, but I'm not sure a lot of people are going when you take...
Right, so illuminated manuscript is a manuscript in which there's a lot of text. A lot of times there are Bibles, Book of Days, the Book of Kells is a famous one, and it's supplemented with all kinds of intense color and decoration, and that's basically what it is. A lot of times there's gold and silver and miniature little pictures in intense detail, but basically that's what it is. And it's something that I find, you know, they're beautiful pieces of artwork, and I somehow by accident, started to do these very small miniature pieces on museum board with text and color, and I had a fabulous time with it.
And now, when you say small, what size?
4.5 inches by 4.5 inches. They're all miniatures. Mm-hmm. And I did so many of them. So at a certain point, as a progression, I started to find myself, I guess, getting tired of doing them and gradually morphing what I was doing.
Let me interrupt you. How long did it take you to get tired of doing them?
About 7-8 months, uh-huh, okay. 9 months.
Okay.
I happen to have a book out. I've worked on envelopes before, and I've done pictures on actual old envelopes. But I happen to have a book out. It was a book that it's called Gorgeous Nothings, and it was someone photographed Emily Dickinson's poetry on scraps of envelopes, and it's a beautiful book. And I was looking at it, and I had all these old envelopes, and I took them out, and I started with text and with decoration creating these envelopes, and it was creating my own envelopes on these miniatures and other things with text. And I gradually, you know, morphed out of the manuscripts and morphed into envelopes. Mm-hmm. And then I did close to 70 of this series. And then I just decided I'm just going to paint envelopes. You know, it was a progression. So I painted envelopes, and I'd been working with text and collage for quite a few years. But for some reason, when I was painting these envelopes, and they're all old and tattered and used, and I just didn't want any text on. I wanted them to be anonymous, I think. I wanted them to be not addressed to anyone, sort of vacant, like who are they going to? Or they could be going to anyone. So for some reason, and I was as surprised as anyone, they became works about color and about envelopes on some kind of flat ground, and they became very colorful. And I did so many of these.
And these were basically abstract, were they?
Well, you can identify, they're very identifiable as envelopes. And by the way, these will be in the show in Concepto. Mm-hmm. And then gradually, I start putting pieces of paper in them, like a letter. And again, they were very, in a very abstract type of way. Mm-hmm. A lot of geometry in some ways, mm-hmm, in it. And then after I started doing, when I started, did maybe so many of those, and I sort of, what do you do after you do envelopes? You do letters. And I start working on letters and some text. And then, so I was working on these letters, and I was so into it. And again, they were kind of anonymous, and I felt like that was the point of them. And then Kiyoshi came to my studio from Concepto Gallery. He's the director and owner, and Kiyoshi is Concepto Gallery. And he came to my studio to look at work, and he said to me, so all the work is on museum board and all the work has been under glass. And he said to me, why are you doing this under glass? You ought to be... the glass hides a little of the experience. And he said, you ought to get these out from under the glass and work on boards or canvas or something. And he really pushed me to do this. And I bought some boards and I started working with them. And so that has now taken on its own new life. And he told me to do one, and he came back to my studio and he looked at it and he said, it was hard for me to make that, to make that leap. But you keep working at it, and I did it. And then I started to have fun with it, which is fabulous. And after that, then he came to my studio and he said, I love this. Now you have to do
now,
two more.
How big are these?
They're 20 by 24. And in today's modern world, that is not so big, but it was big for me.
They're a lot bigger than what you were doing before.
They were bigger than what I was doing before. And the working on the board was a very, very different experience than working on museum board, which is really paper. And so the experience of it and just the board, it was a very different experience for me.
How do you prepare the board?
A gesso, mm-hmm. and then it's sanded, and then I prime it. Mm-hmm. So it's really it's just like working on a canvas, except
that it's hard.
But there's no give, and I thought it would be an easier transition from museum board, which is like 8-ply, like heavy. Even it's paper, but it's very heavy. So I thought it would be an easier transition. And so he said, I love it. I want you to do two more for the show. So I did two more, and now I'm on my fifth or sixth.
Okay, now
so
I'm
really
maybe I've missed something
it.
Here, but
yeah.
what is it you're painting on?
So that's what I said to myself. What am I going to do?
You've got the blank.
That's a good question.
At that point, he'd gone back to his gallery.
So I was rummaging through my studio, looking for something that would be bigger because I kind of like to paint it in its actual size, and I found a piece of, and it had to relate to what I was already doing. It needed to have a relationship to the letters and the envelopes because that's what I was into. And I found a big yellow legal pad that we all have, or I have anyway. Mm-hmm. It's just a yellow legal pad, the most mundane thing you would find in any office supply or Staples or whatever. And I first started by just painting that piece of yellow paper. And then I put an envelope behind it and another piece of paper behind that. And so all this work that's on these boards they're all papers. They're all, again, they're letters and envelopes. And
they're painted. They're not collaged.
And there's no collage at all in them. They are only, they're all painted. So I have, in one of them, there's an old orange envelope. And there's, years and years ago, because I rummaged to garage sales and used bookstores to find material, and I bought this old, it was a garage sale. And I bought this old, it was a grammar book from 1904, and it was maybe someone who was 10 years old and had written in this, you know, grammar lessons. And so, like, instead of collaging it and using it, I reproduced that as best as I could, that old world piece of paper. And a lot of the papers, some of them are, you know, sort of intact. Some of them are tattered. Some of them, and then I wound up finding this very old letter that was on mimeograph sheet, because it was all that old sort of purple. I'm totally dating myself, but the old purple. It wasn't mimeograph. It was carbon copy paper.
Oh, okay.
Carbon copy paper.
And
it used to come out on the other side of purple sometimes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I painstakingly wrote this entire letter, but then I scraped it off. So a lot of this, some of this stuff is readable, like in my old work.
When you scraped it off, you didn't get it
so
all
So now
off,
on some of these, it looks, it looks like writing, but some of these you can read, but a lot of this stuff, the new stuff, you can't actually read, which is actually, I just discovered that in preparing and talking to you. It only just occurred to me that I used to do everything that I used to say the artwork was readable, and now it's some of it or most of it is not. So, but it looks like writing. Hmm. So I just learned that myself. That wasn't conscious. I just all of a sudden realized I was doing that. And it's something, I don't know, it's maybe something about, again, something about being anonymous and being that it's so timeless. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about people communicating or people not communicating with mm-hmm. each other. And it's, and, you know, gaps, mm-hmm. gaps in relationships and things like
so,
that.
So these are less, well, let me go back again. Mm-hmm. When you were painting the envelopes
right.
and the paper,
right. yeah.
Did you have sort of, you know, edges turned up so there were shadows and it had a sense of the paper being something different than the surface it was on?
Were we trying to reach
some kind of super realism or?
So these look, if you look at them quickly, these look like I collaged it. And mm-hmm. when you look mm-hmm. close, you realize they're all painted.
They're all painted.
And I don't think the other stuff did. It was more into flat design.
Mm-hmm.
It was
so,
yeah.
And then somebody who's looking, I wanted to ask you about your audience.
Okay.
You know, how you sort of perceive your audience. But somebody who's looking at this, they're seeing a very accurate, detailed rendering mm-hmm. almost, mm-hmm. painting and rendering,
right.
whatever. And then this indistinct writing.
Right.
And so is there enough there so that they can create a narrative in their mind about what's going on?
I hope so.
Okay. But if they can't read the writing.
So no one actually has ever seen these except anyone who's been in my studio recently because uh-huh. they've never been out. So
when
they,
did you start working on these?
I started working on these this year in the early
did
part
I see
of
them?
This.
I don't think so.
No, I have one here.
Do you? Okay. Well,
okay, so I brought one.
Yeah, okay. Can I take a look at it? Yeah. This is very unfair to the listeners.
This is a quieter one because some of them have very bold color. And but I brought this because it was a little more to talk about than some of the others.
Oh my Lord, look at this. This is incredible. What I have holding up in front of me is, what is it, 22 by 38 or something?
20 by 24.
Oh, 20 by 24.
Mm-hmm.
This is incredible. So this is completely different than what you were doing.
Exactly, yes,
and
I know.
It's exactly as Fern has described it. There's a gray background, and then there's paper, and then there's more paper, and there's more paper, and they're painted on top of each other, and there's, you know, different colors, and there's information that one can absorb and make what they want of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you have a story that you can tell that this tells us about?
So many things I use that I work from have, as I mentioned, rummaged from, you know, garage sales and things like that in old antique shops, whatever. But also I use my own things. I guess I'm a hoarder, and I have lots of old letters and things from old friends, and family members. So I have saved a lot of that. And when I was starting to work on these pictures, I was a little at a loss, and I pulled out. I have a big plastic bin in my one closet, and it's all my old family stuff. It's all from my parents and from old relatives going back, quite a few generations. And I start pulling things out. So I started to use it, okay, which was a little tricky because it's easier to use other people's things than your own. But mm-hmm. What I found was in my father's old papers, and he saved a lot of old stuff. It was his diploma from the High School of Commerce in New York City from in the 20s. And it was a pile of stapled receipts from when he enlarged our kitchen by himself and all the receipts that he had. And then I thought, you know, all of this speaks of a life. It's not just about his life, or it's not just that it's my father's life or someone I know. It's about all our lives are made up of all these. We are all our receipts from whatever we're doing, and from all the little pieces of our life. And, you know, whether it's the high school diploma or the college diploma, or whether it's the parking ticket, or whether it's the receipt from the hardware store, or this makes up a life. All these little things, and maybe it's not really the big things, it's all these little things. And so that's the theme really of this painting, and I call it a life. And in talking in a way about something, so I almost didn't bring this picture because this picture was a little more personal to me than some of the other pictures I've done. And yet I thought, so I didn't, wasn't sure I wanted to talk about it. But then I thought, well, actually, if it's personal to me, it in some ways is more universal to others. And therefore, I decided anyway to bring it. And then there's a letter on the right-hand side. And this is something I happened on. I don't know who wrote this, but it was a letter written on old paper in pencil, and it was signed mother. And
Let me just interrupt. Does this say a different life of? Is that what?
Yeah. So I copied her letter, and it again the letter was so typical of a mother clearly writing to a son and saying, I'd love to see you tonight. Can you come visit? I won't take up too much of your time. And I thought, how universal is that? And so and these things are very fun to put. They've been very fun to put together. I've loved working on them.
That's amazing, and the colors are. Gorgeous, and obviously you spent a lot of time working those out.
Yeah, and this is the quiet one.
Oh, this is a quiet one. Okay. I can't wait to see the other one. Do you write it all yourself?
So I don't write per se, but what I have done is when I am collaging text, okay, I start putting together my own stories, and they were made up of the words in a book or a letter or whatever of someone else, but I kind of rearrange them and repurpose them.
So what you're saying is you cut out each word.
I cut out each individual word, and at one point, like I would take there was a very old spelling grammar book, and I went through the entire book, and there was, you know, when you're in school and they say these are your vocabulary words and your spelling words and put it in a sentence. So the book had all these sentences of words that they were trying to teach the pupil. And so I cut out all these sentences that I just liked for whatever reason. Some were, you know, about nature, and some were about kind of dark, and some were kind of light. And I put them all, and then I just put them on my work table, and I rearranged them to make a story, which was fun. Sometimes, sometimes I'll, on a couple of occasions, I've made lots of little mini stories and put them all together in a huge collage on a much, larger board. Mm-hmm.
Well, what's his name? I mean, Burroughs did this. These cut-ups that Burroughs did.
Uh-huh.
And the same thing with Berrigan. His son's name is Ansel, and I can't think of the father's name. But, I mean, he did.
Right.
I don't know if you've seen those sonnets of his where he... It's basically essentially the same 20 lines.
Wow, I haven't seen them, and I will have to look.
I have a copy of it.
Okay, I'll have to look that up.
It's really interesting because he's got, this is from recollection, but he has essentially the same 20 lines, and he just cuts them up and does incredible.
Wow, interesting.
Incredible things with them. This is one, I don't think that, I think unless one actually either spends a lot of time studying collages or actually does it, I think it's hard to understand that the process is not an awful lot different than painting something. In other words, or composing a mm-hmm. painting, because uh-huh. you know, it's always a question of what goes where and what's right. next to what, and that's mm-hmm. pretty much
right.
what painting is all
it's
about.
True. Yeah.
And the same thing with mm-hmm. with collages.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering, you gave me or sent me copies of two things that you had found, and I'm not sure whether these were actually collages.
Yes, I have the originals right here.
Okay, and so you put these together from different material.
Yes, although what I tend to do is use only one type of material for each picture, because
mm-hmm.
I think it looks a little too busy.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
like I might have taken text from one of these from only one book or mm-hmm. one letter or one mm-hmm.
But
something.
You selected them.
Absolutely. It's very, very carefully selected.
Yeah. You sent me two of them, and mm-hmm. I read them and spent
yeah.
some time with them, because they're really beautiful prose poems.
Thank you. And, I'm glad you enjoyed them.
It's sort of
them.
Like what Berrigan, mm-hmm. I can't think of his name, first name now, what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you'd like to read.
Sure. I will read one. They're very readable, but they are a little hard to read. This one says, and these are from the Illuminated Manuscripts. In my childhood, I knew a wise man. He said to me, I know a way to be happy. I learned it in the fields. So I went forth and saw the brook flowing. I thought it was singing a song, but when I listened, there were no words. The sparrow flew by me with down in its beak, and the red breast with a crumb it had gathered. The hen sought food for her brood of chickens, and the duckling swam beside her mother in the clear stream. The spider threw out its thread. The ant carried a grain of corn in its pincers, and the bee flew homeward to its hive. The brook was not idle. The spider finished its silk house without complaint. The bird is building its nest and feeding its young. The ant provides against a time of want, each in his own language, there's no grammar in these at all, so that's why I'm struggling a little. with different voice, these were teachers of the field. I was ignorant of what even the birds and insects knew. I was young then, and now I am old.
So that's really a prose poem.
I guess so.
Yeah. You know, I mean, a lot of it has sort of the cadence and the, you know, some of the imagery of, maybe a modernized version of the King James version of the
Bible.
Some
of these are taken from very, very old books.
Yeah.
And so let's say this was a five-page thing. I'm cutting out certain things and then putting them back together in a much shorter version or a version that to me says something that I find meaningful in some way. So anyway, and so
how long do you think it took you to do that?
Let me ask
you something different than that, because we're actually, you know, time is, believe it or not, is running out. What's the process when you work? Do you go in every morning and you stay there till the sun goes down? Or?
I work every day.
Uh-huh. Do you have the day laid out? Do you know what you're going to do before you go in?
I love to leave my studio knowing what I'm going to do the first thing in the morning.
Oh, really?
I enjoy doing that. I don't always. Mm-hmm. But if I'm in the middle of doing something, you sort of get on a roll with it. And then sometimes you go back in the morning and you know exactly what you're going to do. And then it doesn't work, or you change your mind, or you know, but that's like anything. I think anything, you know, and you. So I'm yeah, I work every day. I mm-hmm.
And these ideas just come to you? Is that?
I'm full of ideas.
Really? Okay. Now, all right. I want to find out more about that. So how do you sort through them and decide which one you're going to do? And then how do you stick with that one without mm-hmm. letting the ones you've dismissed interfere?
Right. I think like anything in life, as you do it more and more and more, you get a better sense of what will work and what will not work and where you want to spend your efforts. I think you just get better at that, just like you get better at anything that you do a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you have a better instinct for it. Once I get on something like a subject, I love to kind of play with it till I get tired of it. I'm getting like, okay, I want to do it until I think that maybe I'm repeating myself, that I'm mm-hmm. copying myself. And when you begin to think that you're copying yourself, it's it's almost like the painting knows it's gonna, you don't come to it with the same delight. And you realize that the painting knows that, and it's not working as well, or it's not as much fun. And then you're sort of wearing, you want to go through an idea and you want to explore it as much as you can. But at a certain point, you just naturally know you're kind of done with this. And many, many times, the progression to another subject happens naturally, because as you leave one, mm-hmm. you're like, I might start say, I've used this paper enough, I've used this envelope enough, I need to find something else. And you might start even cleaning up your studio and happen on something, or you might, you know I need to find something else. And then you have to dig deeper through your things, through your, you know, and then there are things that crop up that I go, oh, I really want to work on that series someday, but I'm not ready because I'm here now. And I don't want to abandon this. I'm not ready to abandon it. And that takes just discipline. Mm-hmm. So I'm very disciplined. I've become that way. I have worked at a job for most of my life. And so in order to stay in the game, in a sense, in a serious professional way, I had to be very focused to make sure I had time to work. And so you create a discipline, and which you do with almost anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are there particular artists that have made a big difference to you over time? Or maybe they've changed over time.
They have changed. I mean, the artists that I might have loved in high school, or the artists I might have loved in college or art school, you know, it morphs, it changes. And you look for different things in paintings. You know, I've been very Asian influenced. I love Asian work.
Have you been there?
No, I have never, only mm-hmm. through books mm-hmm. and museums, and you know. Museums. Yeah. So I've been very Asian influenced, but also, you know, all the masters. Recently I went down to the city and I spent hours at the Met. I wanted to see Joseph Cornell's boxes. There was an intimate show there on them. And but mostly I wandered and just tried to enjoy everything. It's a surprising, it's surprising what you can find that motivates you in the unlikeliest places.
You know, speaking about the Met, there's a wonderful sculptor painter by the name of Eric Banks. I don't know if you mm-hmm. you know him. He lives in New York, and now he lives mm-hmm. around here. Mm-hmm. And he worked at the Met, mm-hmm. and his job was at night mm-hmm. to be there from 4 o'clock in the afternoon till 8 or until midnight, and they were assigned particular sections where they had to be to make sure things weren't coming off the walls.
He was a guard.
Exactly.
So Andy did that too.
Oh, did Andy do that? Oh, I didn't realize that. And so he would pull a chair up in front of a Rubens and spend 20 minutes looking at the I don't know, the dresses or how the hair was
right,
done.
Right, right, right. Yeah,
or,
yeah.
I didn't realize you should say who Andy is.
Andy is my husband, and he's also an artist.
So yeah. Did you meet Andy at the Art Students League?
We had met previously. We re-met there.
Oh, yes. Okay. That's, do you, when you're working, do you have an audience in mind?
Never, no.
Never.
Never.
No, that's interesting. So, what's your talent? Well, this whole conversation has been tremendously interesting because, to me, because you know you have your own vision, and it seems to be your own vision,
mm-hmm.
and it seems to come from you, and you know, and you produce what you produce, mm-hmm. and that's it. It's not mm-hmm. you know other. It's not like the incredible amount of stuff that's pouring in from the world
mm-hmm.
all the time.
Right. Yeah.
How do you avoid that? Do you have television?
We don't. We don't actually have a television. We do stream things on the computer. Mm-hmm. We have a laptop. Anything we watch is on the laptop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we watch things. I'm not a, you know, I think it's more internal. Okay, I do have it. I recently retired from my day job, and I'm very good at being a hermit and staying home and being in my studio, and so I don't go out much. And I make after every third day, I go to the library. I leave the house. So
you go to the library.
Yes,
that's where you used to work.
I go to the library in Kinderhook where I live. So,
oh.
But I used to work in Chatham
right.
for many, many years. So, yeah.
And you go
yeah.
to see what's going on in the library?
No, I go to take out books.
Oh, to take out books. So what kind of things do you read?
I read just a little bit of everything. I read fiction and nonfiction. I've been going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Recently, some early American biographies of Anne Hutchinson and Louise May Alcott and her mom, fascinating. A book by Eve LaPlante. I read whatever just speaks to me and just whatever I feel like. It's fun.
It's an incredible library system.
Yeah, yeah, it's fabulous.
From all over the place. We're sort of winding down, but I have a whole ton of different things I'd like to talk with you about, but unfortunately we're not going to have time mm-hmm. to do it. Are you interested in film?
I'm interested in every art form,
uh-huh.
but I've never made a film, if that's what you mean.
Do you go to the movies a lot?
I don't do it. I don't do it a lot, mm-hmm. a little bit, mm-hmm. a little bit, more than I used to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a little bit.
And what kind of things do you like to?
Just anything maybe fun. Maybe, I don't know, I don't like anything that's violent,
uh-huh.
nothing with guns, nothing too scary.
Mm-hmm.
I like quiet. I don't know. My taste probably would bore a lot of people.
Well, you're dealing with narrative in the work you're doing, and obviously a novel is one form of narration.
Absolutely.
And
a
film is another.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're watching a film, which is really 28-30
right.
frames
yeah.
per second,
yeah.
Are you seeing how that narrative works? I mean, in other words, are you sitting there and taking apart what you're watching?
No,
I
go to the movies to just have fun and relax a little and just have a night out. Yeah,
uh-huh.
just pure. I think it's healthy for all of us to, you know, read a good book, novel, read a, you know, go to the movies, have a little fun, get together with friends. It's a good thing. It's just to relax and escape a little. And it's good actually to leave your studio once in a while, as much as it is to stay in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
both things are very important.
You know, I have another
mm-hmm.
one of your small pieces that you sent me. And I'm wondering, because they're so, I mean, I'm a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I know the struggle of trying to get a couple of words down that make sense.
Right.
and these are so beautifully written, which are composed and mm-hmm. assembled and whatnot, mm-hmm. which is what you've done. And I wonder if you wanted to read this.
Oh, sure.
This last one, if you can.
Maybe should I read it from here? I just also want to say that some of them are just as mundane as recipes. So they're just, you know, just of.
But.
Yeah, so that some are.
There's nothing wrong with mundane, yes. But I think you're gonna have to
okay.
Read fast.
Fast, okay. It was night. A man was standing at a window. He raised his eyes toward the sky.